adoption journey may seem overwhelming at first, but More to Love, an adoption podcast, is here to provide you with resources, experiences, interviews, advice, and tools to help guide you on your path to adoption. Hosted by a board-certified adoption attorney, this podcast shares the raw and real truths, the struggles and the triumphs, and the real-life family experiences that prove there is always more to love. Let's welcome our adoption expert and podcast host, Nicole Moore.
Happy March, and welcome to this episode of More to Love. Just like March represents spring and rebirth and renewal, my guests today have experienced their own version of rebirth. As two sisters that had no idea the other existed, as they lived their completely separate lives, until one day a 23andMe test revealed there was a sibling. While this episode highlights the beautiful and miraculous connection of two sisters finding each other later in life, this beauty does not come without its share of pain and trauma. As I always remind my listeners, life is both beautiful and tragic at the same time, and it is my goal as your podcast host to share stories that represent that. Please join me today in welcoming sisters Cynthia and Bridget to the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bridget, I want to start with you. You grew up as a single child, is that right?
Yes, I did. I grew up as an only child.
And you had mentioned that although you were an only child, you always wanted a sister, but it was not in the cards for you.
I didn't think it was in the cards for me for the better part of my life. About, I would say, gosh, 40, 45 years of my life, I didn't think I would ever have a sister.
And so when you were 45, your mom had a conversation with you. And what was that like?
It was interesting. I was always the bad kid. I was the one that was always in trouble. And to hear that she hadn't been so perfect as she had positioned herself to be was actually a little disarming, I guess, and kind of maybe even brought us a little bit closer together.
A little bit of a relief there, huh?
Yeah.
And that was the first time that your mother had shared that she had to place a child for adoption. Is that right?
That, yes. And I'm not exact on the dates and the times, so, but that's approximately when she told me.
Absolutely. And how old was she when she had to make this difficult decision?
She was 14 or 15.
How did she describe the decision to you when she mentioned that she had placed one of your siblings for adoption?
It was pretty gut-wrenching. I mean, she was very upset when she was sharing it with me and kind of replaying it in her head. She reminded me every year on January 15th after she told me that if I were to ever to meet a woman whose birthday was January 15th, 1965, that I should find out she was adopted. And it became kind of a rallying point for the rest of the family, my daughter, myself, my mom, and my stepdad. And we had Christmas ornaments that had the name that my mom had given to that child, which was Hope. And I had pillows in my backyard that said Hope on them. And she went a little overboard. Her house was covered in things that said Hope. I probably noticed it once I knew. Who knows how long she had had those things there. And I just didn't know what it meant. But she described it as being not even really a decision because it wasn't her decision. And I shared with you a little bit that we all, Cynthia and myself and my mom, just read a book that's called The Girls That Went Away. And, you know, I had an issue with the title, because it wasn't the girls who went away, it was the girls who were sent away. And my mom talked about being sent away and that she was an embarrassment to the family and that she was told to go to her Uncle Raymond's house in Jacksonville and not come back basically until it had been taken care of. And so it was a very traumatic experience for my mom.
Understandably. And it's eye-opening to hear about adoptions that took place during that time versus adoptions that we handle today and how birth mothers are treated then versus now. A lot of times I say, you know, well, not much has changed, but in this scenario, much, much has changed regarding placing and the birth mother's choice and trying to protect women against placing when it's not a voluntary choice and when a pressure for somebody else. But certainly things were very different at the time that your mother placed. And why do you think she waited that long to tell you? How old was she when she finally told you?
If I was 45, if I'm right about that, she would have have been 65-ish. I think maybe, and this is all speculation, I've never really asked her why it took her so long to tell me, or if I did ask her, I think maybe mortality. The older she was getting, the more that she thought that she may never find her, and that she hoped that I would continue looking.
Hmm. So how did your world change when you knew that you had a sister somewhere out there? Did you feel immediately that you wanted to go search for her? Did you feel like you needed to let this information settle and marinate? Did you feel scared? What type of feelings were you going through?
All of the above. I was excited, and I definitely did not sit on the information. My daughter and I kind of worked on figuring out who this person was once her name showed up in my daughter's 23andMe, and did a little bit of cyber stalking and, you know, one look at Cynthia, and it was pretty obvious to me that she was my mother's daughter. She looks more like my mom than I do. And so it was a moment of, okay, we're going to do this. You know, we're going to try to find her. I didn't know how she would react to me or to my mom.
Yeah.
I didn't know until after the fact that I was going to have this weird, like, wait, I'm an only child. I'm your only child. Mm-hmm. And now she has another child, you know, and that's kind of a weird pause in life to realize that you're not the only apple of your mommy's eye anymore. We call her the golden child because she can do no wrong. And unfortunately, my mom had me for the last 52 years of all the things that I did wrong. So...
We could take one for the team, Bridget.
Yeah, I really did take one for the team.
I love how you said you didn't know how your sister would react, because I think that is a very common fear and feeling when people are doing these DNA kits, like you mentioned. Well, do they even want to meet me? Well, what if I upset them? So it's all the what ifs, and it makes the thought of exploration or reconnection ever more scary.
I have a lot of other friends that have had similar experiences, and they all refer to me as being lucky because mm-hmm. Cynthia's not a disaster. She's not
well,
crazy.
You,
I mean, she is crazy, but she's not crazy, like, you know, certifiable. Crazy in a good way. And it's been a really pleasant experience for me. I can only speak for me, and I know it has been for my mom. But yeah, there's a lot of people that it doesn't go so well for.
Bridget, you had mentioned to me that you had finally revealed Cynthia as the name of your sister through a 23andMe kit, but didn't you do an Ancestry.com search previously?
My mother did. I bought it for my mom for Christmas in 2019, and I don't know why it was that year. I don't know if that's just when it became a thing or when I embraced it or whatever, but I got it for her for Christmas, and she had taken the ancestry test and got no results. And I didn't know until after the fact that it really tore her up. She was very disheartened that there was no results, and back to that feeling of that she might never find her. And so in 2020, I bought the 23andMe kit, and my husband wanted one, and my daughter wanted one, and my mom. So I think they were BOGO that year. And Mallory called me, my daughter called me one day at work, March 16th of 2020. And she said, Mom, I got my results back from my 23andMe and I need to ask you some questions. And I'm like, okay. And if you think about that date, the world was a really weird place at that point. And we all didn't know what was going to happen. And it hadn't quite shut down, but it did 2 days later. And she ran some names by me. And I said, oh, that's your cousin's wife or whatever. And she said, well, who's Cynthia Penwell? And I said, I don't know that person. I've never heard that name before. And she said, well, it says that she's my aunt.
Wow. What was that feeling like, actually hearing that name and connection? Because this was almost 5 years after your mom had told you that, yes, you have a sister, right?
Uh-huh. I was excited. I couldn't wait to tell her. I was scared. I didn't know how Cynthia was going to react. I didn't know how we were going to reach out to her. And I shared kind of a little funny story with you about what I ended up doing. But hearing her replay it is actually funnier than me, because she thinks it's hysterical that I did LinkedIn.
Let's segue into her version of getting that message. Before we do, what about your mom's reaction when you told her?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure I've ever heard more anticipation in her voice. She was absolutely over the moon. She seemed to have zero reservations, like no concern over whether or not she should reach out or whether or not she should find her. I told her I would do it, and she said, do it, like now. So she was incredibly excited.
I have to think in spending time with both of you that the name Hope represented much more to your mother than just a name. And while your name is not Hope, it is Cynthia. Tell me about that date in March 2020, where you're never on LinkedIn, as you mentioned, but you happen to get a notification after leaving your class.
Yeah. I mean, as Bridget said, March 16th was, I mean, here in Texas, I'm in Austin, and I have been teaching at the university. And we closed down. I had just told my students goodbye, and they didn't know that we would be back, but I did. It was a really difficult day. The whole world was kind of closing down here. I never get on LinkedIn. I got to my house and really just sort of intended to be mildly disassociative and numb throughout the rest of the afternoon with the heaviness of COVID. And I get this LinkedIn response, and it says, "Hi, I know this is weird, but I think I'm your sister." That was definitely weird, by the way.
I love hearing how the person that is reaching out, hey, they grapple with, how do I say this? How do I approach them? I mean, do I come out with your my sister? Do I say, hey, how are you? I think that was a great approach, Bridget. You know, just cutting straight to the point, you know?
Bridget's personality, to be direct.
I'm a pretty direct person, so I figured why fluff it up? It is what it is, right?
Now, Cynthia, you knew that you were adopted from a young age. You mentioned it, or as early as kindergarten, but did you know that you had a sister out there?
Once I got the LinkedIn response, I got pretty excited. I really was really trepidatious about getting involved with 23andMe. I was had a lot of feelings of loyalty to my parents. I had a really good experience. My childhood was carefree and kind and supportive, and I had a lot of anxiety about meeting bio mom. But strangely, I didn't have any anxiety about meeting a sister. I was really excited.
I don't think that is as strange as you might think. In my involvement in the adoption triad for 18 years, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of adult adoptees know that the decision was made by a birth parent or by a grandparent, but the siblings are seen as the innocent bystanders, you know, that also might benefit or suffer from the decision. So it actually makes a lot of sense that you were able and excited to meet a sister, but had a lot of feelings surrounding meeting your bio mother. I love that you said, use the word loyal so much. And a lot of the episodes we've done in the past, I always ask the adult adoptee when they do say, I wanted to search for her and I needed, you know, it was like a missing piece, a missing chapter. I didn't want to search for her and say, oh, I wish I lived with you. I wish you brought me up. It was just, I want to search for her so I know my chapter one. I love that you mentioned the loyalty was what never kept you guessing about your birth parents. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I didn't feel like I had something missing. I felt like the family, I knew I was adopted, but my parents met my needs. And I think had I had a different experience, my impulse to reach out might have been different.
I've seen, again, other adult adoptees on our podcast say there was nothing wrong with my adoptive parents. I couldn't have asked for better parents, but I always had the question of who my bio parents were. And so I feel like your mention of loyalty was maybe centered around a fear that you might let your parents down should you have any inquisition or inclination to learn more about your birth family.
Oh, 100%, Nicole. I was even concerned that I would let my mother down, who had been dead for over 10 years.
You mentioned letting the memory or being disloyal to the memory of her. So I wondered, you know, certainly as we discussed, some things have come so far in adoption. I love that your parents told you at a very young age, you mentioned being in kindergarten when they first started talking to you about adoption. And I wonder if they ever said anything to you or if it wasn't even an option back in that time. Like, if you ever wanted to find them, we could help you.
Yeah. My mother was so, I think, emotionally connected to the story. She really, really felt the oppression to my birth mother. And she was always really sensitive to paint her in the very most positive light. Mm-hmm. And she was absolutely expressed to me a comfort with me looking for her. It didn't seem possible because we didn't have a lot of data, but the feelings that I had and still have, really, frankly, around loyalty were my own.
Mm. I think that speaks so highly to her memory, Cynthia, that you led such a fulfilling, amazing life with those parents. I just think that's so touching.
Thank you.
You know, you use the word oppression, and we heard from Bridget her recollection of how your mother was really forced at a very young age to place you for adoption. How did your mom describe it to you, Cynthia?
She described it a lot like that, Nicole. She described it as my mother was, my bio mom was a good Christian girl. The bio dad was a nice boy who played on the football team. When these things happened in the 60s, girls didn't get choices. She talked about how tragic it must have been for my birth mom.
Were you buying that grace and understanding and kind of justification?
That's a great question. A little bit. I think there was a part of me that was always a little suspicious because the storyline seemed like the kind of storyline you might tell an adopted kid. Your mom was so lovely. Your father was a sports star. It just felt a little too convenient. Maybe that's a weird thing to say, but that being said, I don't think that I, because my mother contextualized it at such a young age, it's so gently for me, I don't think that I felt the kind of like anger that some adoptees might feel, like I was given away and she didn't care about me. I think my parents were really mindful to not give me that information, not give me an idea that I wasn't loved or cared for.
Well, good for them. If I can be really honest and ask you a question that I think most of our listeners might be wondering, when you found out that you had a sister, did you have the thought, why could they keep her and not me?
Sure. I think that that's a really normal thought to have, but I didn't have it for very long. It sort of passed through my brain, and then immediately I knew the answers because it had been a part of my storyline on my side of the family as well. So I knew that she didn't really have a choice, and I knew Bridget was, I don't know, 2 or 3 months younger than me, maybe 8 years. And I could do the math. Naturally, a young woman 8 years later is more prepared.
Yeah. So you guys find out about each other as the world is falling apart, you mentioned, in March 2020. And then, Cynthia, when do you have a chance to actually meet Bridget?
Oh, gosh, Bridget, when did we meet?
April of 21. We talked a lot in between there, and we did Zooms.
We did. So we saw each other in that.
Yeah.
You both separately have told me individually that the connection came so easily, that you got along and connected and actually shared some really kind of neat similarities. You mentioned, Cynthia, that it wasn't really that way when it came to meeting your biological mother.
Yeah, it didn't have the ease. I felt so pressured. And here's the thing, I think, for in my experience of meeting my biological mother, I had not spent a lifetime pining for her. And she had spent a lifetime pining for me. And that's a very strange experience to have. It felt overwhelming and a little smothering.
Did you feel any comfort in knowing that she had always thought about you and that you were not placed and forgotten, though?
Oh, absolutely. But that felt so much more comfortable from afar.
Yes.
Yeah. As a theoretical notion than the visceral experience of being next to someone who has thought about you so long.
And I wasn't there when Cynthia and my mom met. And there's a part of me as we're talking through this that's wondering, do you think if I had been there, it would have been different?
It would have definitely been different because I feel so much safer and more comfortable with you, Bridget. But it would have been different on a lot of levels too. We probably needed to manage that.
Yeah.
I didn't feel ready to manage that. Up my head. took my best friend with me as a safety.
I just love your vulnerability. I think it's so touching. Like, here you are. How old are you at this time, Cynthia, that you're navigating meeting your birth mother?
Well, I met her. I was 57.
Okay, so you're a grown woman. You have experienced the great upbringing, childhood. You are married. You have kids of your own. You are a professor at a renowned university. And you are stricken with anxiety and fear of meeting your birth mother. I mean, that's the kind of truth of it, right?
Very much so. I sat in the parking lot with my best friend outside of that restaurant, just blathering on before she stopped me and said, we're going to take a deep breath and we're going to go in now, honey.
Take me and the listeners through some of the fears that might have gone through your mind before you walked into the restaurant. Is it, will she be proud of me? Will she accept me? What were some of those fears that were rumbling?
You know, that's a really good question, because I'm not sure that I can really grasp onto a verbiage to tell you what the fear was. I wasn't afraid she was going to reject me. We talked on the phone. We'd been on Zoom. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't afraid that I wasn't going to be enough. I don't generally have that fear in the world, frankly. And, you know, it was just a somatic, visceral terror that wasn't linked to any words.
That makes sense. I mean, it's almost like this, just the anxiety of this particularly important moment of your life.
Right.
That I'm sure felt overwhelmingly terrifying.
Very much. It was a very important moment of my life, and I knew that.
And when you did meet her, how quickly did that fear and anxiety subside?
I'm not sure the anxiety is subsiding. But the fear subsided pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what was kind of amazing about it, and even looking back on it, Nicole, is I do look so much like her.
Yeah.
My mannerisms, the way I smile, so many things about me are linked to her. And I had never had that experience with another human ever. I mean, except Bridget. We have the same weird toes and fat.
Tell us about some of the similarities when y'all were comparing notes after you had met each other about your lives and some of the crossover similarities. I thought that was interesting.
Oh my gosh, Bridget. Well, we'd almost have to get Mom's notebook out for that one, wouldn't we?
To me, there's some really obvious standout ones. I shared with Nicole when we were doing our pre-call, the story about us both exclusively driving convertibles, which I think is hysterical, because that it makes you wonder what is it in your DNA that, you know, is it that we're both vitamin D deficient and we need the sun? I don't know.
I think also, we both work too hard and need an easy way to relax, maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe that's it. And where that comes from, right? Because Mom worked in, 30 years. I mean, really, really, really long time.
We have so many professional similarities, you know, the ways that, not just the ways we are physically, but the ways we are in the world, the boldness. I think those things have been amazing to find in you. And I'm the same way. I'm like, how are we so much alike? In many ways, not like her.
Yeah. Absolutely. One of the other article stories is that Cynthia casually said something about having to take Estella to the shop that day. And I was like, who's Estella? And she said, oh, that's the name of my car. And I said, has your mother told you what your grandmother's name was? And she was like, you gotta be kidding me.
Wow.
She had no idea, but she had named her car after her grandmother. I think the other really crazy one is she had absolutely no ties to Austin, Texas. I actually grew up in Austin, Texas. She was born in Jacksonville. I lived in Jacksonville for about 13 years. She grew up in St. Petersburg, which is where I live now. And her and my daughter both graduated from the University of South Florida. So that's another really weird, like we followed each other around the country in reverse, basically.
Absolutely. We both had our houses obliterated within a couple of years of each other.
By a storm. Yep.
Oh, it's been crazy, the similarities. It has been, you know, Nicole, what I do remember about being an adopted kid in my youth was the thought of, I wonder if I ever have passed Mom or Dad or sibling in the grocery store on an airplane. I wonder if I've ever passed them and we didn't know it. And as we found each other, you know, during these last few years, Nicole, I think I still wonder about that.
Yeah. Well, just the experience we just had, our mom was in the hospital for several days and it was pretty scary in the beginning. And Cynthia got on a plane. I got in the car. She lives on the East Coast of Florida. My uncle Ray flew in from California. Another family member flew in from Virginia. And Cynthia and Ray, who had never met before, which is her uncle, ended up on the same flight at the same time to my mom's house. And Cynthia's best friend lives in Malvern, where my mom lives. And Cynthia typically at that time of year would be going down to see her because it was spring break time. And so she could have very easily been on that same exact flight with her Uncle Ray and never known it.
The 6 degrees of separation, just, it gives me the goosebumps. It really makes you think. And some of the things that you just mentioned are things that happen in movies, but in fact, they happen in, it turns out, in real life every day.
Yeah.
And I know that, Cynthia, you're a licensed clinical social worker and a clinical supervisor. And I understand that that was 100% because of your adoption experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think being an adopted kid changes the trajectory of your life in so many ways. I think, yes, absolutely. That experience also in my family, my mother's sister had mental health and intellectual issues. And those combination of experiences for me as a kid really formed a big impression. I knew from a very early age that I wanted to work with families. I knew from a very early age that I wanted to advocate and help people who didn't have a voice.
Did you compare that to your 14-year-old birth mother that perhaps didn't have a voice at that time?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
You mentioned that it was more of an orphanage setting where you were adopted. Certainly now a birth mother finds herself pregnant and young and unable to parent, then they might call an adoption entity and meet with them and select a family so that at the hospital, when she gives birth, the placement can occur then. You've mentioned you were probably a little bit over a year old, and orphanages are not a word that we hear anymore. But what was your understanding of what happened after birth? Were you taken straight to this orphanage?
Yeah, I was taken directly to the orphanage. At least that's my understanding of it. And then what happened that caused me to linger in the system as long as I did was I have a unusual condition called anosarchia, but it's where your lenses or the cornea of your eyes are two different sizes. And so the folks in the orphanage thought I was going to be blind. And they kept dissuading families from adopting me because they thought I was going to be disabled. And so I was 15 to 18 months before I was adopted.
Did your parents adopt you under that disclosure?
Yeah, my mother was a teacher and quite the feminist and advocate in her days. And when they fell in love with me, you could walk into the orphanage and sort of walk around looking at kids. And they fell in love with me. The woman who was running the orphanage had a really kind of special bond with me, which my mother always contextualized for me as being really important to me as an infant, feeling safe and connected to someone. And my mother said, you know, blind kids need parents too.
I love that. You know, you hear the word abandonment a lot, Cynthia, when we're talking about placement. And I wonder how that word worked its way in your experience.
I don't know that I particularly remember feeling abandoned. The story that I was told at such an early age was that my bio mom had one, no choice, and also that she loved me and wanted what was best for me. And so what's complicated about what I'm going to say next is it was kind of part of the verbiage of oppression for teenage mothers at this time. But I did absolutely feel like I was sort of a gift to my adoptive parents.
Absolutely. And the way that they introduced adoption and your birth mother's love for you, coupled by them, you know, any abandonment that was there, they chose you. Like you said, you walk around and say, oh, I think we'll get her, you know, blind or not. I mean, I would imagine that that would increase a level of being wanted or a level of belonging, perhaps canceling out abandonment.
I mean, yeah, I think any person who experiences adoption has an underlying little vulnerability in their attachment, this underlying sort of fear that they might be abandoned in the next relationship. relationship. I don't think you can just fully mitigate that. It's a wound. But I think that on the wounded continuum, I was pretty far in the direction of having those things pointed out to me in really kind and gentle ways.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned the continuum, because certainly there are different levels of abandonment, different feelings from adoptees, different upbringings, and different stories told. And so I know our listeners are always interested, as some of them are prospective adoptive parents, in hearing what was helpful shaping your childhood and what was helpful when talking about adoption. And it seems to me the overriding answer is you were loved, you are loved, and we love you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have three adopted children myself, so that is the other way this has really affected my life. And so, of course, my experience with adoption on that end of the continuum has been very different. Two of the three children that I've adopted, we have very open relationships with the bio parents. So I think that in that way, I had a really good role model, both for how that affected me and helped me move through things, but also I can provide that role modeling with my own adopted kids.
That's amazing. Bridget, here you are just living your single child, only child, favorite child, best child life, and you hear that you have a sister. What has this reunion done to change your life?
We talk a lot about the irony of what was going on in our individual lives at the time, and I'll let Cynthia be more specific on her own if she chooses to, but we had all experienced a lot of loss around that time. And my family growing up was literally always my mom, my aunt, and my uncle. And that was it. My grandparents were all gone. And my mom and her sister and brother were really the only extended family that I had. My stepfather, his family has become my family because he's been my stepdad for longer than my dad was my dad. But it was an extension of family and feeling less alone in the world. You know, we've talked about it's inevitable at some point my mom's not going to be here. And the thought of having somebody by my side through that is also her child, that can also help make difficult decisions, that can help deal with the pain of what that's going to be for me, because she was my whole life. So it's, I can't say enough, it's been nothing but positive as far as I'm concerned. I do have some of that weird, like, why you pay attention to her? Why you respond to her text? Why, you know, there is a little bit of that, probably what would have been sibling rivalry growing up all along, for her attention, for her love, for, you know, whatever that is. But it's so much outweighed by the difference that it's made in my life and that Cynthia has made in my life that I get over it really quickly.
Oh my gosh. I still love that you share it, because it's like the reality that you were the only one, and you were so tight and are so tight with your mom because it was just you two. And I could definitely relate to that, both a single mom to one child and how close I was to my mother. So I love that you mentioned that, because I could see, if I put myself in your situation, like, but you still love me, mom, right? I mean, you remember, I've been here the whole time, right, mom? I mean, you remember what, I could see that. And it's, you know, those are kind of some of the things that we don't talk about.
I just wanted to add a thought to that too, is that one of the things that I kind of have come to terms with is that she has romanticized Cynthia for 57 years, right? And that was probably always there. I just didn't know it. So she probably, when I got in trouble, thought, well, if I had the other one, she wouldn't act this way. She wouldn't have done that.
You know? Well, and she would have been right, Bridget.
No, she wouldn't have. We've both already said there is no, with God made sure that my mother didn't have to deal with both of us, because she wouldn't have been able to as we've grown up together. But there is a certain amount of that, you know, she's probably always romanticized this golden child that we refer to Cynthia as, which I now have pillows in my backyard that say that instead of hope. So
I know that it has to mean something very special to you, Bridget, though, knowing, speaking of her age and mortality, that you got to be a part of introducing her to her daughter. And you got to kind of solve that puzzle piece for her, to have that comfort of being reconnected with her daughter before she passed.
Absolutely. Well, in our first Zoom was my daughter, me, Cynthia, and my mom. And my husband was standing over my shoulder and he was like, it's remarkable looking at the four of you. And so for my daughter to also have that experience and to now have an aunt in her life, which she didn't have before. It's just neat. It's like this whole generational thing of like, it would have been really sad, I think, had we found Cynthia after my mom was no longer here. It still would have been wonderful, but I'm really glad that my daughter and I got to be a piece of finding her and connecting her with my mom.
Yeah. And you spoke about hearing other stories of reconnection and maybe those aren't great. You find out too late. We had an episode where tracked down over years, finally found him and the birth father died a week earlier, or you turn into a situation where you find them and they don't want to meet or whatnot. So this is the happy side of the spectrum where the meeting was beneficial to kind of all involved. And so Cynthia, I wanted to just kind of ask you, from your perspective, the same thing that I asked Bridget. I mean, it sounds like, again, you had your family, your mother, you had your partner, you had your job. But now that you have uncovered your birth family, your sister and your birth mother, how has that changed you?
I feel like it's changed everything. The other similarity at this stage of our life is the story of loss that was occurring for Bridget and I both, 2018 and 19 and 2020. And so my family had gotten smaller too. My father was still with me. He passed about a year after we found each other, but I had already lost my mom, my brother. My other brother is halfway across the country. We don't have a very close relationship. And I'd lost a friend. My family had gotten really small too. And I've always been a person really connected to family. And that had been really hard for me. And so I got a new family. I got my family kind of back in some way. I don't know how we talk about it in that way, but it's been really amazing. We have a family thread now. We reach out to each other most mornings.
I, again, love the affirmation that, you know, this addition and this blessing and this connection doesn't come without the loss. And just to be vulnerable in speaking that it's not all rainbows and sunshine, and that both of you individually, separately, had gone through your share of loss. And this came kind of at the end of the storm.
We're in the middle of it.
Yeah. We had a little more storming to do.
Well, you could do it together.
Absolutely.
Before we wrap up, Bridget, what do you want listeners to know about if you are told that you have siblings and they're going through all these fears and talking themselves out of looking for them, or maybe they don't even know where to start? What would you tell them?
That's an interesting question. You know, as you were talking and I was thinking, I didn't do it for myself. I'm in general a person who likes to problem solve and a pleaser. And I desperately wanted to find her for my mom, or to somehow be a part of my mom finding her, which is why it was me that bought the Ancestry and me that bought the 23andMe. But it was for my mom. It wasn't for me. And so I don't think I ever really stopped to think about the impact that it would have on my life in a positive way, and that I was going to gain something in it. And so for somebody who's not necessarily a problem solver or a people pleaser, I would say, don't just think about what it's going to do for the other person, think about what it could potentially be for you. It's been life-changing. It really has been life-changing. And there's days that I don't know what I would do without her, and I wonder how I ever did.
Oh my gosh, that gives me the goosebumps. You didn't even do it for you or for your daughter. You did it for your mother, and then the blessing came tenfold to you.
Absolutely.
Cynthia, what would you share, or what do you want to leave our listeners with, being an adult adoptee and having a wonderful adoption experience and maybe not ever feeling the need, as you shared, to have any interest in the biological family? How has your experience changed that view?
Oh, wow. I can't imagine my life if I hadn't done this. I sometimes will say I didn't even know I was lost until I got found.
Oh my God.
I think the other thing I want to say is that everything that isn't love is fear, and don't let fear be the decider in your life.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you both so much for your vulnerability. Thank you for sharing this amazing story of a new chapter, a new connection, the coming full circle, so to speak. It is so beautiful. And I know it's wrought with ups and downs, and it's not all rainbows, but it certainly is inspirational and dripping with love.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of More to Love, an adoption podcast. And speaking of love, there is always more to go around. So if you or someone you know is going through the adoption journey,
please, please, please share our podcast. Help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook at Jeannie Tate PA, connecting with us on LinkedIn, or following us on Twitter. As a reminder, this podcast is not intended to, nor does it, create the attorney-client privilege between myself, guests, contributors, and or any listener for any reason. Content from the podcast is not to be interpreted as legal advice. So thanks again for joining us. We cannot wait for you to join us next time on More to Love.